From smoke and carbon monoxide detectors to fire extinguishers and more, Hitta Home Safety Products keep your family protected in case of emergencies. Did you know that your detectors need to be replaced every 5 to 10 years? Hitta detectors feature enhanced sensing technology that reduces false alarms and fast alerts for more time to get out safely. Visit us in-store or on Menards.com and shop our great selection of Hitta safety products.
Save big money at Menards.
Hey, I know. I'll use my trusty frying pan as a drying pan.
Welcome to this week's episode of Out of the Drying Pan, a Pokemon the Series podcast, where each week we discuss two episodes of the Pokemon series anime or whatever other random stuff we happen to think about. Just a quick reminder, we are an E for Explicit podcast, so listener discretion is advised. I am your host, Alex, and I am joined this week by my co-host, Austin.
I miss Halloween.
I thought you hated Halloween.
Since when do I hate Halloween? I don't hate Halloween. I hate Halloween fairs at my workplace. How about that? I hate any and all mandatory fun.
So couldn't you argue that Halloween, just because it's a holiday, is forced fun?
No, Christmas is forced fun. Halloween is actual fun.
We don't really have any actual Halloween plans.
No, because it's the middle of the week and it's awkward. Plus, let's be real, your Halloween plans are Dragon Age.
That is correct. So as of recording this, we are 4 days away from Halloween. I know this episode is going to be coming out after the fact. We're kind of talking to you from the future, but...
The past.
Future for us now, the past for you later, sure.
What?
What?
Where are we chronologically?
I don't know. Time is a circle. But yeah, It is an awkward day because, yes, it's a holiday, but it's also the release of a game I've been waiting for a decade. So my evening and afternoon is going to be completely consumed by this. So I've really foregone any kind of proper Halloween plan. Plus, it's in the middle of the week, like you said. So there's kind of hard to do something anyway.
I think Halloween should be a national holiday.
I wish it was, but sadly not. We have to make our own fun, Austin.
But not forced fun. Not forced fun. Do not make me have fun at work.
You know, at least your work is having a party, like, before Halloween. We're having a fall fest, like a general fall fest in November, which includes, like, pumpkin decorating, I think. Which I'm like, that should have been weeks ago. Like, Isn't this a Halloween thing? I don't know why we're doing this in mid-November, but...
I may try and win the costume contest.
There's a $50 prize.
I have my my really cliche inflatable T-Rex costume. But I have two. One of them is Spider-Man T-Rex and one of them is Venom T-Rex.
So which one are you going to wear?
I think Spider-Man would be more recognizable.
Speaking of Venom, we watched the Venom movie yesterday. We went to the theater.
What a shit show from start to finish.
It was honestly probably the most bizarre theater experience I think we've ever had. We went to a theater that was new, just had opened up recently. I don't know when, but recently. We went early, so there was like nobody there, even though it was a Saturday.
We went early in the day.
Early in the day. And immediately, I can't even explain it. Austin, you explain it.
All right, I'm great at complaining, so I'll do this.
Do it.
Well, we get there and we wanted to like do like the kiosk that they have at the front to get our tickets and pick our seats. They have a person standing there to be like, what movie do you want to see? And then they click the screen for you. And they're like, what seats do you want? And then you have to tell them. They click the screen for you. And I'm like, we can press a goddamn touchscreen our own selves. Thank you very much. How about you go, like, do something useful somewhere?
That was the most useful thing I think they could have been doing at that moment, but...
Everywhere else in the world is getting rid of customer interfaces. And this movie theater is, like, forcing you to interact with a person.
So, it's super strange because in other locations that we've been to for this particular chain, there's two options. You either have the cash register where you go up to somebody and they manually do it for you.
Right.
Or you have the kiosk where... Well, at least in recent times, like you can go to the kiosk or you can buy the tickets from staff member or whatever.
Not here.
I didn't even see a cash register. I think it was only just those kiosks, but they have like a staff member. And, you know, to be fair, like we were saying, this is probably a mandate from their manager. Like,
yeah, it's not the teenager's fault.
No, I'm not going to disparage the teenager for doing what they're supposed to do. But it was really patronizing because it was like, okay, you go up there and it's like, we all know how to operate a kiosk. It's like, I don't need somebody to do the job of pressing the buttons for me. Like, my hands aren't broken. I can literally decide, like, what movie I'm here to see. Because didn't she ask it in a weird way? She's like, have you decided what movie you want
to
see?
I've never done that in my life. Have you ever done that? Gone to a movie theater without an intention?
Absolutely not. I've looked. You can go online easily. You don't ever go to the movie theater just because. You're like, I don't know what I want to see today.
I think maybe people used to do that when movies were relatively affordable. But that's not the case anymore. Now it's like an event.
It's a calculated effort. You go. You decide what time you want to go. You decide what movie you're going to go see. You already have a plan in action. Like,
and I think we have to describe the physical layout of this place.
It was like a black cave of darkness.
Right, because this used to be a movie theater by a chain that moved to a different location. This chain that is one of those, like, cook you food restaurant and movie
theater. They're the dine-in theater.
Yeah, dine-in theater. I think they were limited with their space. So they used the lobby space as the kitchen? That's what it was, right? The kitchen was right at the entrance.
Yes, because the, like you said, the theater was not built originally as a dine-in movie theater. It was built as another, you know,
just a regular.
A regular theater without that capacity. And so, like, after this other chain came in and took it over, they had to renovate.
Right. So you walk in and it's very claustrophobic. I don't know. It felt very strange. And everything was the color black. Like, black.
The carpet
surface
was black. The walls were black. Like, everything was black. And it was, like, very weird because usually,
like a black box theater.
Yeah, but it was weird because usually if you think about, like, other theaters you've been to, like, the carpet's, like, red or blue or something. Like, it's not. And the walls are, like, beige or something. Like, it's not. It was very weird aesthetically.
It was, like, oppressive.
Yeah, it was oppressive. It was very weird. And so then we go into the theater after making our way down, like, the long black hallway.
Yeah, past the kitchen area.
Past the kitchen area. And we go in and we sit down. And, okay, to back up a little bit, when we were selecting our seats, the layout of the theater appeared to be that, like, the seats we picked did not have any seats in front of them. So I asked the girl, I'm like, are these seats unobstructed? Like, did they have anything in front of them? Because I don't like to have stuff in front of me. Like, I just want an unobstructed view to the screen. And she's like, yeah, it looks like that. And I was like, all right. So I picked those seats. So we go in and locate our seats. And the layout of the theater was not at all what was on the touchscreen.
It was simply wrong. It was inaccurate.
It was completely wrong. And so our seats were completely different seats than I was expecting. And I was like, what the fuck? So we ended up moving, which, don't come at us, because there was literally nobody there. And we waited long enough to see, like, okay, nobody's coming. Like, there's nobody here. We noticed when we sat down in our new chosen seats, that was just, like, the row in front of us, because we were up the stairs, but, like, down on the floor level, there were, like, office chairs.
Right. It was where there's supposed to be handicap seating, where there's, like, supposed to be a big open space for someone to roll up there.
Yeah.
They put office chairs.
Why?
There was, like, a line of, like, rolling padded office swivel chairs.
They were absolutely office chairs in the zone where it would be for a wheelchair user.
Yeah, that's not useful. That's not what we need.
I was baffled. Like, I was like, why the fuck are there office chairs? And then, so these other people come in, and they were literally, like, only three other people in the theater with us, and the movie starts, and of course, I guess we could talk at length about the movie itself.
And we will.
But overall, it was just a really weird experience. And then they turn the lights on, like, the movie ends, right? And there's, like, an after credit scene. They turn the lights on before the first after credit scene even played.
Right.
It was so awkward.
The awkward thing was, it was, like, during, like, a climactic scene, they came up to us to give us receipts. And usually at a movie theater like this, that means they want your credit card information.
But we'd already paid.
It's like, wait, what are you doing? They gave us, like, one of those, like check thing, the folding checkbook things.
Okay, to back up again, Austin orders chicken and waffles, because we did end up getting food at this place, which never again, because it was too fucking expensive, which I'm sure you're saying, well, Alex, duh, it's a dine-in theater, of course there's upcharges. I mean, it was absurdly expensive. I got a flatbread with, like, vegetables on it, and it was, like, $20, basically. I was like,
and it looked gross, too, I'll be honest.
It was gross. It wasn't at all like they described it. They got you the wrong order. You ordered chicken and waffles, and they only just gave you waffles.
Yep.
They completely gave the wrong order to you. And then, like you said, we paid right there. Like, there's a little button. Like, you press the button on the tray and they came. We ordered before the movie even started. We paid before the movie even started. And then at the climax of the movie, this girl comes back, interrupts us, hands us these books, and we missed an entire scene.
For no reason. The books don't contain anything but a receipt for the payments we've already made.
They could have come at the end. Or, honestly, when they brought the food.
Give us the receipt when they gave us the
food. Give us the receipt. Like, it was bullshit. They completely ruined, like, the climax of the movie. I'm like, were you just waiting?
I lost track of what was happening in the movie completely. It was, like, a pivotal moment.
Yeah, it was a pivotal moment in the movie. And it was, like, were you waiting there? Were you waiting to, like, interrupt us there? Because it really felt like there was not a worse time she could have come.
And the movie was shit.
And the movie was ultimately...
It's a Venom movie. We know going into it, hoping it was shit, actually.
But it wasn't even, like, shit in a good way. Like...
It was just shit.
We were talking about it. We had our post-movie debrief or whatever. We were talking about it. And Austin came up with, like, a brilliant...
Brilliant.
In my opinion. Brilliant rework to a scene that... Actually, like, I feel like a monkey could have come up with it.
Those monkeys with those typewriters, yeah.
Basically... Well, we don't want to spoil it, but the ending scene could have been set to a music piece.
It was a very incompetently done script and movie, yes.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even, like, fun.
And the ending left a lot to be desired. It wasn't even, like, left open-ended where you could be like, oh, you know, a little element of suspense of like, oh, it's not as dire as you thought. Nope. Basically, they tied a little shit bow on that little shit present and they were like, there you go, motherfuckers. Thanks for the money.
Venom the Last Stand, the Out of the Drying Pan official review.
It wasn't great.
I'm so excited to go see Kraven the Hunter this Christmas, though.
That was also frustrating because that movie's been delayed a few times, I think, and they couldn't even give us a definitive date as it was. It was, like, just December.
We are big fans of Sony Spider-Man without Spider-Man movies here on this podcast. I don't know why.
So we've been waiting for Kraven the Hunter, though, for a while. We'll see what happens.
Oh, I hope it's a shit show.
We're not expecting great things, but...
Madam Web was fucking fun.
Madam Web has become a cult classic.
Thank God.
Okay, what other ones are there? Madam Web, Morbius.
That's it.
That's it. Oh, that's it.
End of list.
Kraven the Hunter will be the trifecta, then. Oh, and then what else did we do? We watched The Hitcher. That was fun.
Did you like it?
I did like it. I thought it was absurd, but I liked it.
It's
crazy.
It's what Venom the Last Dance should have been.
Exactly that. Venom the Last Dance should have been... Well, he did hitchhike, so...
Yeah.
There was an element of hitchhiking. We had a theme going. This... Okay, The Hitcher, just so anybody who isn't familiar, it is with... I can't remember the guy's name. The main character.
Pony Boy,
something or other from The Outsiders. It was fun.
Great.
No,
that's the official Out of the Drying Pan review. Of The Hitcher.
I mean, there was really no semblance of a plot. I mean, I do agree with the one review we read about, like, there wasn't really a motivation. But then I was like, well, do serial killers really, like, need a motivation? Like, I think he's just crazy. I think that's his motivation, is he's crazy.
We watch this movie because Alex always goes on and on about how she wishes she had a life as a vagrant living in the desert, working at a diner.
Okay, I didn't say I want to be a vagrant. I really like the desert... What would you even call that?
Desert punk?
Desert punk, maybe?
Can you tell we live nowhere near a desert?
I like the aesthetic of, like the retro future diner in an Americana desert, like, backdrop.
You need to see Thelma and Louise.
I just love that aesthetic. It's like you have an endless expanse of nothing under a sky of stars. You're out there in, like, a desert. It's like a post-apocalyptic scene. I don't know. It's cool.
You need to see Thelma and Louise.
I'm sure somebody who, like, lives in the American Midwest or, like, desert would be like, bitch, you have no idea what you're talking about. But...
Ooh, there's actually also an episode of the Twin Peaks revival that is kind of like that.
I appreciated that we also had a theme of, like, the desert in addition to the hitchhiking because Venom the Last Dance also took place in Roswell, New Mexico.
Well, speaking of reviews, we got a new review on Apple Podcasts. After weeks of me begging for one.
Thank you.
Thank you to Jack Otak 2.
Thank you, Jack Otak.
Jack Otak says, it helps the day go by fast.
We love to hear feedback from listeners, so keep it coming, people.
Yeah, more 5-star reviews, please.
Speaking of reviews, I just want to briefly circle back to Dragon Age, because the reviews drop on Monday, which is tomorrow for us, and I am eagerly awaiting what people are going to say. I really hope that... It gets generally favorable reviews. I'm not expecting, like, Game of the Century here, of course, but I think a solid, like, you know, 8, I think, would do wonders for people. This game has been brigaded really hard. Like, if you've followed any kind of, like, the anti-woke crowd is really, really hating on Dragon Age for no reason. And it's really, really disheartening. And I hate that people do that kind of stuff. But
the anti-woke crowd is against literally everything that exists.
I know. They have no lives.
They describe themselves as anti-woke. They're like the least intellectual members of a society.
I mean, their entire personality is being racist and bigoted, so I'm like, I really don't think that's as much of a flex as you think it is, but you do you there.
If you're anti-woke...
This is not a podcast for you.
No, it is not.
There is such a thing as a wrong opinion in certain cases, and that's one of them. So there is, this isn't a case of like, well, there's just a variance of opinion, and we all should respect each other's opinion. No, fuck off with that. I'm interested to see what like the normal people have to say about this game, and I'm really excited. And so I will report back. Austin is making me record next week. Regardless,
you can take 2 hours of your time. Sorry to tell you,
it's probably good for me anyway, because I'll have probably grown roots into my couch from not having moved in like 48 hours, so it's a good thing. I'll have a break in my gameplay, so I will report back to you after 10 years of waiting, and I will tell you what I think and how far I managed to get. I'm gonna take my time.
Are you emotionally prepared? Well, first of all, we know you're gonna take your time, because you spend 300 hours doing absolutely nothing before the first gym badge in Pokemon games.
That's true.
Second of all, you're never going to finish it.
That isn't fucking true, Austin. I have beat Dragon Age. Dragon Age is my one game that I will beat over and over and over again. Every other game, I can't make it to the end. But I have played multiple playthroughs, start to finish.
Are you emotionally prepared for if you don't like it?
Oh, I thought you were going to say in general. I'm not emotionally prepared in general, because I really feel like I'm going to be really emotional when I eventually have it in my hand. There's no universe in which I could ever think this is a bad game.
Okay.
I don't think so. I mean,
realistically, no. It'll be fine.
Realistically, no. In the very minute chance that it somehow completely blows and is completely antithetical to like what I'm thinking it is, yes, I'll be disappointed. But I'll still love it. Because, I am a simp for Dragon Age. So, I'm so excited. I can't wait. Oh, my gosh. I've been living and breathing this for the past, like, 4 months. So... Insane. I am ready. I've had my characters like made for like 10 years. I've been waiting. Austin, I can't even tell you.
Alex, that's outrageous that you've prepared characters in advance like that. You know what else is outrageous?
Enlighten me.
Outrageous fortunes.
Wow. You're a regular Jacob. Something outrageous does happen in this episode. I don't really understand the title, but like...
Yeah, there's nothing outrageous. It must be a pun or a TV show or something I missed.
I mean, slightly outrageous, but the fortune... Oh, wait. She was a fortune teller. Duh. Yeah.
But I don't get the outrageous parts of it. There's something going on that we're missing.
Outrageous.
All right, let's do a coin flip. Are you heads or tails? I always forget.
Tails.
Okay, so you're doing the summary for Outrageous Fortunes, and I'm doing the summary...
The summary proper.
Okay, we need some new terminology. It's 153 episodes. You are doing the 30-second challenge, and I'm doing the recap.
I feel like we could do better than 30-second challenge.
Okay, well, let's come up with it now. 153 episodes in.
30-second recap, and then the summary.
But a recap and a summary are the same thing. That's the problem.
Oh.
The 30-second...
30-second... What's a fun word?
Ooh, 30. I got one.
Okay.
The 30-second abstract.
Abstract?
Yeah, like that's abstract like for a paper.
Executive summary.
Yeah, and I'll be the executive summary.
God, okay. We are so bad at this. All right, whatever. I just watched this, but I barely remember.
All right, 3, 2, 1, go.
Okay, it's a perfect day. As we reach our destination, Pokemon Center, we see a crowd gathered around, and there's a guy, Delaney, battling with his Poliwrath. He works it super hard because it's 8 in a row without any breaks. Misty is like, I'm going to challenge you because you have a Poliwrath and I have a Poliwhirl. Poliwhirl gets its ass handed to him. Meanwhile, Misty takes her Pokemon to the Pokemon Center, where Poliwhirl ends up with Ash's Kingdrock. And it gets transferred and traded and turns into a Politoed. Oh my gosh. Misty hates it. Time. And that is where we are.
Ah. So this episode was not good. Don't leap to defend it now.
There was an evolution. How can we hate it? Something happened.
This episode was not good.
Okay, what is the point of defending or having a discussion if you're just going to tell me how I'm supposed to feel.
If you enjoy this episode, donate your brain to science so we can find out why.
I want somebody to do an autopsy on me after I die and, like, cut into my brain and see what sort of, like, mess is going on in there.
This was just a boring one. I'm missing the annual festivals, if I'm being completely honest.
It's been a while since we've had an annual festival.
I think they're done. I think the annual festivals are done.
Don't say that to me.
I think we've seen the end.
No, annual festivals are a mainstay.
But I've looked ahead. I don't think there's any time for them.
Okay, no, what was our last annual festival?
I think it was Extreme Pokemon.
Wait, was Extreme Pokemon before or after the Zatu people?
Before?
Was the Zatu? Well, the Zatu wasn't really like an annual festival, was
no,
it?
That was an everyday occurrence.
Oh, that right. That was their everyday lives.
What's the weather going to be?
The satellite says. So it was really the Gary and, like, the skateboarding episode? That's crazy.
So in today's not very exciting episode, the twerps are at a Pokemon Center in an unnamed town. And there is a huge-ass crowd of people there watching a Pokemon battle. Delaney and his Poliwrath are fighting Mason and Mason's Hitmontop.
The real-life kid.
Mason is a real kid.
Is this another bring your kid to the booth day?
We'll never know.
I just love the juxtaposition of, like, a grown man doing a teenager voice with an actual child doing a child or teenager voice. Like, it's great.
It's disconcerting, I think.
It really is, because it doesn't fit at all. Like, you get trained. You get used to hearing, like, a professional voice actor doing the voices for all the characters. And then when you hear a actual kid, you're like, what the fuck? Can we talk about the submission comment that Ash, or like when they talk about submission Poliwrath using?
I'm not gonna stop you, go.
Well, I was a little confused because Ash seems confused by the fact that Poliwrath can learn submission, because submission is a fighting type move, and I'm like, Ash, are you stupid? Like, Poliwrath is a part fighting type Pokemon, and Misty doesn't even, like, tell him that.
Ash battled a Poliwrath at a fighting type gym.
It was that Chuck?
Yeah.
Ash, please. I don't have the brain power.
Ash doesn't know what a fighting type is, I suppose.
Please, God.
And Misty, or no, rather, Ash really wants to battle this Poliwrath, even though it's not a fighting type. He is interrupted because Misty wants to go first. And somehow Misty weasels her way into fighting Delaney first. And it's Poliwrath versus Poliwhirl. And it lasts for about 3 seconds before Poliwhirl gets his ass kicked.
Poor Poliwhirl.
Maybe if it was ever trained, ever.
This is true. I mean, I feel like we are Poliwhirl fans in this house. We talked at length about how Poliwhirl, Pokemon tried and failed to make Poliwhirl happen. Poliwhirl did not happen, sadly.
And it will never happen again after this.
No, it will never happen again because we lose Poliwhirl to whatever the fuck Politoed is, but... Yeah, Misty doesn't train it, so.
This makes Delaney's Poliwrath have 8 victories in a row.
This poor thing.
Which admittedly is exactly how the gameplay works in the game if you're the player character. But I think realistically, it was probably not a great fit.
Yeah.
Now it's Ash's turn. He sends out Bayleaf. But we don't really see the Bayleaf battle because we mostly cut to Team Rocket saying, we want that Poliwrath. Whatever.
Well, they have a brilliant plan.
They have a brilliant plan to catch Pikachu with the Poliwrath.
Their logic is, and I'll save the exact quote because this is my quote, but their logic is Pikachu's too strong, so we need to catch an even stronger Pokemon to defeat Pikachu. So it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, because if they can't even catch Pikachu, then how in the hell are they going to catch an even stronger Pokemon? But whatever.
This is a shitty episode. Okay, so we cut back to the battle. And
that's Team Rocket logic. I mean, that's par for the course. It's honestly funny, but...
Bayleaf is all beat to hell. Poliwrath is visibly sweating, even though it's a tadpole.
Ew.
And Brock cuts in and he says, I'm calling it now. The battle's over because your Poliwrath is about to die of a heart attack. He doesn't mention the fact that Bayleaf is, like, bruised and battered, but whatever.
Nobody cares about Bayleaf.
Yeah, Delaney's a negligent trainer. So we all go into the Pokemon Center, I guess, and give our Pokemon to Nurse Joy. While we are there, Chansey is mopping the hallway without a wet floor sign.
That is a violation.
This is why we don't... What even is Chansey? It's an egg creature?
A disaster is what it is.
Okay, the disaster Pokemon, Chansey, should not be left in charge of mopping floors.
was Chansey mopping? Or because I missed the mopping thing. So I was like, what liquid, mystery liquid, is on the floor?
Okay, so Chansey is either mopping or like shooting its bodily fluids in all directions all over the floor. I'm going to go with mopping.
Okay, good.
Whatever that liquid may be, Ash slips and falls, and all his shit flies everywhere out of his backpack, including the King's Rock he won in some annual festival. I can't remember which one.
It was the Sumo Conference. I looked it up in the episode Ringmasters.
Was that from the West for alligator?
I think it was. Oh my God, I think it was. Ah, we remember. All right,
so from the West, King's Rock, which Poliwhirl unnoticed picks up, puts on its head, because Poliwhirl always was kind of dumb, right?
No, I love Poliwhirl. Oh my gosh.
But it was always kind of dumb.
But it was like lovable, and like it wasn't like dumb in like a Psyduck kind of way.
Well, for now.
I have thoughts about that, and I'm really disappointed.
I would argue Poliwag, drug dealer Poliwag,
right,
was nothing but helpful and kind.
It was sweet.
Except for that time that it tried to murder Meowth in the Christmas special.
That's true.
And then Poliwhirl was kind of like cowardly.
He's kind of like the level. He's like the cowardly lion, kind of. He's a lovable, but kind of goofy, but well-meaning.
It never seemed particularly smart to me. It seemed like it got like a downgrade in intelligence when it evolved from Poliwag.
It's smoking too much of that Salveo weed.
Ah, there we go.
I mean, but it was powerful and it was loyal and, you know, it just, it's a neutral Pokemon. It's a good Pokemon. It's just a, you know, Poliwhirl. Okay.
I liked how when it used Bubble Beam, its hand, its gloved hands would glow and the Bubble Beam would come from that.
The bubbles come out. Yeah.
So Poliwhirl, in its kind of stupid way, puts on the King's Rock, gets recalled in the Pokeball, and then we give all our Pokemon except for Pikachu and Togepi to Nurse Joy. Meanwhile, Delaney not only is an abusive trainer, he's also an idiot who falls for Team Rocket's fortune-telling trick. Jessie is in her head-to-toe fortune-teller outfit at a table in the forest.
Where else do you find fortune-tellers, like?
Then some orange farmers come up, because they have a delivery of oranges for the fortune teller, because this fortune teller is so accurate that they were able to tell her what they should grow for the season.
They struck it big in the orange juice business.
Why were those oranges like the tiniest little things I've ever seen in my life?
Because it's all a big sham. They didn't have a bumper crop of oranges. I don't know where they even got those from, but...
Surprise, surprise. These orange farmers are actually James and Meowth. Delaney, who's probably not even as smart as Poliwhirl, is told to put his Poliwrath's Pokeball. By the way, that means that he did not give the Poliwrath the Nurse Joy when the Twerps did.
Oh, it's still beat up.
Yeah, still beat up.
It's still sick and dying. Okay.
So he puts Poliwrath's Pokeball on the table and is told to close his eyes and count to 30. And then he opens his eyes 10 seconds later to find Jessie, the fortune teller, absconding with it. At this point, the Twerps run up. Or no. Do they run up now?
Yes, they try to sneak away, and then Ash and friends just so happen to be walking out of the Pokemon Center at that very moment.
They're here to say, Delaney, why are you leaving? Weren't you supposed to leave your Poliwrath with Nurse Joy?
Clearly not.
So, of course, Team Rocket runs away. In the balloon, I can't recall.
Yes.
The Twerps plus Delaney, they all run off a cliff and fall into a hay bale pickup truck.
Very convenient.
Mm-hmm.
So at this point, I was like, what the fuck? Like, can anybody else, like, never do anything? Because they fall into the hay bale truck, and Ash goes to call out Noctowl because he wants somebody to follow the balloon to see where they're heading to, and doesn't remember that, like, literally 5 minutes ago, he left his Pokeballs with Nurse Joy, which I'm not really certain why he left the other Pokemon's Pokeballs there. I mean, I guess maybe they're there for, like,
just a general checkup.
Sure. We'll just go with that. So Noctowl is not with them, and Ash conveniently forgot that. But I'm guessing, maybe I missed it, but did they show, like, Brock also leaving his Pokemon?
He must have, because he has Crobat, Timothy.
Well, that's what I'm asking, because I'm like, okay, Brock never battles, so unless he just left them with Nurse Joy alongside Misty and Ash for, like, another general checkup or wellness check, he doesn't think to call out Crobat, or he can't call out Crobat because he doesn't have Crobat? Like, I don't know.
So, in the anime, does Nurse Joy put the Pokeballs in the machine, press a button, and it goes, doo 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 doo? Or does she, like, actually look at each Pokemon and be like, okay, you're good?
I'm going to assume... Okay, no, wait, let me think harder. I think, and I could be wrong, Pokemon that are, like, fresh from battle or more grievously injured get an actual physical checkup. But she must also have a machine where they do, like, a general, like, zoop, 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 you know, whatever, like...
It's checking for broken bones.
Just a general, like, refresh. Have we ever actually...
What is she doing back there? What is going on?
I'm going to ask kind of a naive question, and I apologize, but there's a lot of episodes, and I don't remember the nuances of every time we've seen the Pokemon Center or whatever. Have we ever seen the Pokeballs go into the machine, the healing machine?
I know the do-do-do-do-do. Nurse Joy uses that as, like, a trainer, come to the desk, sound alert.
But we see them, like, put Pokeballs, like, on a tray, and then she, like, takes them away somewhere. So we've never actually seen the healing machine, per se.
I don't think so.
I'm gonna assume there has to be some kind of technology like that, because she could not possibly have the capacity to do a physical examination of every Pokemon that comes through those doors. I don't know. I think we're thinking too hard.
I think we need to get, like, Nurse Joy MD, the medical drama. Like, what she gets up to when we're not watching the twerps. Like, what is she doing back there? Ooh, and what torrid affair is she having with McDreamy and McSteamy?
I want to see that, and I also want to have a documentary following the gym, the league inspector Joy or whatever.
Ooh.
That would be super fun.
See, that's not what I thought you were going to say.
What was I going to say? What did you think?
I thought you were going to say, like, Reno 911 with Officer Jenny.
Oh my god, that too.
Incompetent.
The detective Jenny that was also writing fan fiction about Brock. I can't do this.
Exactly
I
that.
Shouldn't do this. I love it.
Well, those are more interesting concepts in this actual episode. Because In this episode, Team Rocket's doing the thing where they have stopped. They don't just take the Poliwrath to Giovanni. They want to use it to catch Pikachu. And they're like, okay, Poliwrath, you obey our orders now. So it slaps the shit out of them. Meanwhile, there's a weird scene where the twerps find a second Pokemon Center, and it's a log cabin. I don't know how far this hay bale truck has taken them, but it's far enough that they found a second Pokemon Center. And they go, and they Skype up Nurse Joy, and they're like, are our Pokemon ready now? We're in a different place now. Could you send them our way? And she's like, sure.
That can't be common, right? Like, wherever you leave your Pokemon is usually where you go and pick them up from.
And I don't think she even, like, questioned it. She was like, okay.
Like, why would you ever drop your Pokemon off? Like, what cause would you have to then leave without any Pokemon and go to a different Pokemon Center? Like, what the fuck?
They're, like, a mile up the road.
It's so weird.
And she's like, yeah, whatever. Here you go. So she sends them their Pokeballs back.
We know the reason, the real reason, is they needed a contrived way to trade it.
Okay, we're going to discuss that when Poliwhirl evolves.
Sure.
We go and find Team Rocket, of course. Somehow, they have put Poliwrath into some bondage gear. I don't know how they managed to put that thing on that tadpole. But they did.
Okay, I'm sorry. I have thoughts on this. Okay,
maybe this is, like, the greatest episode ever, and I was too harsh. And the fact that Team Rocket has this, like, bondage gear thing ready to go should make it a fantastic episode.
I feel like we need to mention the passing oldster guy who, like, came up.
Oh, right. The mysterious old man who walks up to the twerps and says, it's terrible. And they're like, what is it, old man? And he says, a Poliwrath is battling an Ursa ring.
Thank you.
Makes sense to the twerps, because they know they're looking for a Poliwrath. But this inexplicable old man has no reason to be running around screaming his head off about a Poliwrath and a bear.
He's like, this tadpole is beating up a bear in the woods.
Which, if that happened in real life, would be notable. But in the Pokemon world, you'd think that'd be no big deal.
Okay, so is this guy, I wonder, you know what, I just had a thought. Is this oldster, because he was dressed in, like, overalls and stuff, which is kind of, like, unusual because we really don't see people in overalls. Was he the guy driving the hay bale truck?
That would make sense. And they, like, established a rapport with him after he found them in his truck.
Like, maybe he was going to his farm or whatever with his hay bale truck, drops them off, I guess, at the Pokemon Center in roadside stop or whatever. And he must have, like, a farm nearby. And so he, like, runs back to them because maybe, like you said, they build up a rapport. He knows that they're Pokemon trainers.
Maybe he knew they were looking for a Poliwrath.
Maybe they told him off screen and they're like, oh my god, it's terrible. There's a fucking ruckus going on in the forest. And they're like, okay, thanks. That's the only thing that makes some semblance of sense.
Okay, you know what we're going to have to do? I'm sorry to tell you.
Write a fan fiction about this guy?
No, even better.
What?
We're going to have to watch the scene and the dialogue.
Okay.
My impression watching this was they had never seen this man before in their lives.
Me too, but I felt like I don't remember exactly what they said enough to like dispute it otherwise. So let's see if there's any, if it lends credence to our theory of he was the driver of the truck.
It was like really quick too. It was like 3 seconds.
Well, yeah, because they just needed like a plot device to like get them to find Polly Rev.
Next time I'll be ready for Team Rocket.
Oh, this is terrible. Huh?
What's happening?
It's awful. There's this Polly Rev that challenged the nursery ring to battle, and now they're feuding like crazy.
Polly Rev?
Yeah, and you know there's 3 other folks too.
Team Rocket.
Okay, so we could easily say they knew this guy because he literally ran up to them.
They seem to have some level of familiarity with him.
But he did not seem to know about the Polly Rev situation.
What did he say at the end? He said, and there are 3 others too?
Three others.
Like, that's a weird thing to say at the end. I think we're analyzing this too much again. But, I mean, it seems plausible that he was the guy.
Okay, so the hay bale driver informs them that Polly Rev has been forced into bondage gear.
This is so weird. This is so weird.
It's the Mach 3 Matterminder.
Is that what she said? It was hard to discern
what
she was
saying. That's what I wrote down. I don't know what she actually said.
Matterminder. Okay, whatever.
And it forces you to move. So it's really bondage. It's like sci-fi bondage.
This was like the ball gag bondage shit from like AJ.
This is much worse than that because it controls your movements.
It literally is like a bunch of rings attached to like chains that go back to like a central disc in the middle. It looked really suspicious because Polly Rath's mouth is in the middle of its like face, I guess. So it really looked like a ball gag was like in its mouth. And then it had like the shackles around its like legs and arms.
Well, Team Rocket have a joystick controller that they use to control Polly Rath somehow. I think Vampy and Corsola?
Yes.
They knock the thing off of Polly Rath. Did you like the sequence of then the matter minder ends up on Jesse and Meowth's like, I'm on this. And he controls Jesse as a trainer.
I wrote down, it defies physics to fly onto Jesse.
That thing was looking for its next victim. It has like a sentience.
I know. It would like literally flew through the air and somehow clapped itself around her arms and legs and thighs or whatever.
This is the AI revolution.
And Meowth is, like, way too eager to, like, be like, yeah, I'm gonna make you do whatever I want to do and make you fight like a Pokemon.
So he, like, puppets Jesse through the air to battle Corsola.
This is so ridiculous.
But James comes in on this, too. And he tries to get Jesse to use Flamethrower and Hyper Beam.
So you claimed that you weren't sure why this episode was called Outrageous, and I feel like this is the part where outrageous is a good word to use.
Maybe we should look it up. Is outrageous fortune a thing? Oh my god, yeah, we're so stupid. It was a movie.
It was?
It was a 1987 movie starring Shelley Long and Bette Midler. The title was taken from Shakespeare's Hamlet.
We are terrible literary lore nerds.
Lord. It was directed by Arthur Hiller, who I mistakenly read as Arthur Miller for a second. And that was interesting. What is this movie? I've never heard of this.
So it comes from a very famous line in Shakespeare.
Yes, it does. Oh my god, we're so dumb. I'm going to have to edit this podcast to make it sound less dumb.
Okay, I think, to be fair, none of us have read Hamlet for like 15 years. And like,
you're not supposed to read Shakespeare. You're supposed to watch Shakespeare.
Oh, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. You know what? This is all your fault, Austin. And you want to know why it is?
It's always my fault, but why?
Because I specifically, very specifically, did not consult Bulbapedia.
Oh, okay.
And so I feel like, is that on the trivia section of Bulbapedia?
Let's find out. It's time for our Bulbapedia section.
No, you told me last or 2 episodes ago or whatever to stop using Bulbapedia. We had to stop relying on it. So what did I do? This episode, I went out of my way very specifically. And I was like, I am not going to look at this episode. I am not going to see what it says on the trivia section or anything. And this is where it's gotten us.
Well, guess what? It says the English title is most likely a reference to a Hamlet quote from the God to be or to not to be soliloquy. And it also mentions the booby. And apparently a game show was also called Outrageous Fortune.
See, Austin, this is what happens when we don't look at Bulbapedia.
Okay, and I have more information. There was a moment of Polyrath slapping Jesse that was removed from the release on Kids WB and the first DVD release, but was restored for the second DVD release.
Oh, well, would you look at that?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I like how this trivia also references AJ, which I completely just pulled out of my own brain without any prompting. So good job, brain. Oh, they say we haven't gotten to that part yet, but they say Team Rocket says Shazam at one point, which may be a reference to Captain Marvel.
I mean, does the word Shazam have any reference outside of Captain Marvel?
I don't know.
I don't know either. Let's move on. Eventually, Jesse is not able to use Flamethrower and Hyper Beam, and she loses her harness. Misty, even though she's using Corsola, sends out Poliwhirl, who promptly evolves into Politoed. Now, where do we even begin talking about this?
I'm really sad that Poliwhirl's personality seems to change.
Again.
I don't know. I'm kind of conflicted, and I'm really trying to figure out how to say this, because on the one hand, it's like, okay, Politoed has become noticeably more, like, absurd, but Misty's also the kind of person that just doesn't really suffer any kind of, like, goofball personality traits in her Pokemon. Like, she already treats Psyduck like trash sometimes, and Politoed's kind of gone the same way as Psyduck. Like, it's definitely... What is the correct word to, like, describe?
I think the King's Rock has fused into Poliwhirl's brain and caused some sort of obstruction that has dramatically affected its capabilities.
Obstruction.
So, I think they were like, let's get Psyduck 2 up in here.
That's too much.
Was that the idea? I mean, they've completely lost interest in Psyduck. Psyduck never appears anymore.
Yeah, we haven't seen Psyduck in a while, but I really just feel kind of, like, bored of this, to be honest with you, because it's like, I mean, I'm bored of, like, Misty having two Pokemon that are just kind of, like, simple.
Right.
Her reaction to them is just, like, frustration, and I'm like, is there anything you like about your Pokemon? Like,
let's go through her Pokemon. Psyduck is generally stupid and not seemingly on the same plane of existence as the rest of us. But he has, like, very clear outward displays of emotion and stress.
He's always stressed.
He's stressed. He has, like, reactions where he thinks things are funny. Sure. Psyduck has a lot more personality than Politoed. Sorry.
Well, what is Politoed's personality?
Politoed's personality is Politoed.
I mean, it's just, like, an annoyance.
It claps, and then it'll just be clapping, and then Misty will be like, do something, and it won't do anything. Then she'll say it again, and then it'll do something. Like, she has to, like, remind it it's not just an observer, I guess.
Maybe. I mean, I guess the only explanation is that the King's Rock did cause it some brain damage, but...
Okay, what else did they talk about? Okay, how about this? How about, why is Johto almost over and we're only now getting Politoed?
Yeah, I remember, like, I feel like we barely see Politoed. Like, Politoed really doesn't, like, do anything.
It's only here for a few more episodes, really.
Yeah, so what was even the point of that?
She got that Poliwag going into Johto, presumably because the intention was always for it to become a Politoed. And then, like, they waited 3 years for it to evolve.
Why?
Weird.
I mean, to be fair, Misty's Pokemon doesn't have, like, a lot of screen time as fair. It is.
Fair.
But, like you said, to go through the trouble of even evolving it at all, it's like, if it's only going to appear two more times after this, like, what is even the fucking point?
They should have evolved it earlier. Like how Zubat turned into Crobat pretty fast.
I wouldn't have minded it turning into Politoed earlier if it kept the same personality. But to be honest with you, the fact that they completely, like, destroyed it by giving it this weird, I don't even know what you would call it. Like, it honestly just, like, disobedient, but not in, like, a malicious way. It's just, like, off in its own little la-la land all the time. I'm glad we didn't see this. I'm glad we got more of Poliwhirl than this.
Yeah, we got a lot of Poliwhirl, I would argue.
Poliwhirl was cute.
Okay, who are Misty's other Pokemon? We have Togepi, who
Corsola.
is a chaos god pretending to be a baby and maliciously tries to sabotage things. We have ever loyal Staryu.
Hiya.
Goldeen, who basically is a literal actual fish. What are her other Pokemon?
Corsola.
Oh, and Corsola was hyperactive when we first met it, but it hasn't really displayed that attribute since. Like, it jumps around, but that's it.
It was a menace prior to her catching it. It was, like, destroying the...
Homes
of the other Corsola, and, like, the family was like trying to actively like get rid of it, and it kept coming back, and the other Corsola were like, oh my fucking god, get this thing away from me. Like, so yeah, that's it. That's her roster.
Yeah. Oof, Misty, you got a rough life ahead of you. You gotta get things together.
And she actively seems like she hates Politoed now, so.
Okay, so Poli World Evolving, I guess in the world of the anime, if Nurse Joy sends you a Pokemon that is holding an evolutionary held item and sends it to you from one Pokemon Center to another, it counts as a trade and it evolves.
Yeah, in the games it's a trade, right?
Right, it's a trade held item. Which I always thought was a little too much, but whatever.
I hate trade item evolutions. Like, it just doesn't make sense. Well, I mean, we all know the real reason is early days, they wanted to encourage people to buy two versions and trade with your friends, and that was the way you did it with the link cable and all that stuff. But honestly, I never traded with people. Like, I just want to be able to play my own game without any outside influences. Like, I don't want to have to trade people to just evolve my Pokemon. Like, let me just play the game. But I guess Misty traded it to herself, so I guess it counts.
Politoed is exactly how we described it. It's a mess. Brock is like, looks through his guidebook, which somehow has the move list of Politoed in it.
Sure.
This book has anything you could possibly imagine. He says, Politoed should use Swagger. And we get a little introduction into the fact that Swagger causes confusion, but also boosts attack. And then we blast off Team Rocket and the episode's over. The end. Delaney was pretty worthless.
Yeah, that was great. That was a nothing burger of an episode because, I mean, I don't know. At first, I was kind of excited because I was like, oh my gosh, it's an evolution episode and we get Politoed. But then as the episode continued, I was like, okay, Politoed is horrible and I miss Poliwhirl. And we only see Politoed apparently for like two more times. So it really was useless and I don't really know why it ever happened at all. So, eh.
Yeah, I think I conflated this episode with the next Politoed episode. And I think sure. I may have also conflated it with that episode where Poliwhirl fights the Poliwrath at the Sea King fishing competition. I think I combined all of these into one super episode where Misty meets a trainer who has a Poliwrath and he's very rude to her, which did happen. And then Poliwhirl ends up evolving into Politoed and defeating the Poliwrath.
That did not happen.
Which did not happen in this episode, no.
That would have been a better episode.
And I think the next episode, there's like a rival Politoed or some shit.
Isn't there a shiny Politoed at some point?
Is there? What does shiny Politoed look like?
It's pink and blue, I think.
When the shiny... Oh, okay. Yeah. It looks pretty good, actually.
Okay, maybe I'm wrong because the Politoed in the next episode is a regular Politoed with like a headband on. Okay, maybe I... also had a false memory. Does shiny Politoed not appear?
I don't recall it appearing.
Maybe not.
Oh, I like how shiny Poliwrath is green.
Oh, yeah.
So they're swapped.
Sorry, guys. I guess I just had a false memory there.
Ew, shiny Poliwag and shiny Poliwhirl look exactly the same.
Shiny Poliwag and shiny Poliwhirl?
Yeah, look at them.
What? They're just like a lighter blue.
It's like one shade of blue, but not enough basically to be noticeable.
I guess it's worth it for Poliwrath or Politoed. Politoed looks good.
Yeah, I like green Politoed, or Poliwrath as well.
Yeah, it's the one time green actually works.
It makes sense.
Because it's a toad.
We have to talk about how Poliwrath is a shitty Pokemon, sorry.
Poliwrath is a shitty Pokemon?
Yeah, it's Poliwhirl, but with angry eyes.
It's got extra fingers.
It does?
It's got extra, yeah, see how Poliwhirl has like a mitten, and then like Poliwrath has like another finger.
Oh, I've never noticed that.
It has bigger hands.
Okay, well, okay. So it got a finger added to it.
And then it's bigger and its legs are like bigger and it's got angry eyes. And then it also has a fighting type, which Ash forgot about.
Yep. So. Poliwrath shouldn't exist. It should have always been Politoed. Anyway, MVP, LVP, and quote.
Hot take.
Gen 1 Pokemon are not better than later Pokemon. If this shit came out today, people would tear it apart.
That's true.
People would be so...
People complain...
Sending death threats to people. They would be insane.
Look, people complain just for the sake of complaining. There's no pleasing anyone. So, whatever. I'm just neutral about it. Honestly, I've never used Poliwrath. I don't have any strong feelings either way, but...
I mean, I will say I think Poliwrath looks better than Poliwhirl. No offense, Poliwhirl.
Poliwhirl's super cute.
MVP Elevine quote.
Kept it that way. Anyway, all right. Who's going first? Heads or tails?
You're going first.
Oh my God. My MVP is going to be...
Politoed.
No, my MVP is going to be Poliwhirl.
They count as the same.
No, they don't. No, yes, they don't. Do. No, they don't. I can't do that. No, I have to separate them because they're different. Their personalities are totally different. They might as well be different Pokemon.
And the official Out of the Drying Pan MVP, LVP spreadsheet, which I meticulously keep tab of, even though we spent about 45 seconds reviewing it at the end of all this, they count as the same.
Fuck. Okay, then I can't. I can't in good conscience give it to Poliwhirl because...
You could give it both MVP and LVP.
No, because I have a different LVP.
I don't know. The other day I gave you James, but specifically James as Professor Oak. So it didn't count as an MVP for James.
It counted as Imposter Oak because he was playing the part of somebody else. But since you won't let me have this, I'll have to pick somebody else. I am going to give my MVP to the old guy.
Sure.
Why not? Because he's fun and he reminded me of Mr. Douglas.
He's Mr. Douglas's cousin.
He is. And he was like, oh my God, there's a ruckus and you have to help. And so, sure, why not? My LVP is going to be Chansey.
Yes.
Fuck that Chansey. First of all, they blatantly disregarded workplace safety laws. OSHA is having a conniption fit. Ash slips and falls as a result of this incompetence and causes his stuff to go everywhere. And because of that, we had the King's Rock accident. And poor Poliwhirl could have had a life as a Poliwhirl. And because Misty at the beginning, doesn't she say, like, you'll be a Poliwrath one day?
Yeah, she wanted a Poliwrath.
Yeah, she's fully intending for Poliwhirl to be a Poliwrath. Like, that's its destined trajectory or whatever. Poliwhirl seemed, like, pretty excited for this. You know, it was like, okay, yeah, I can get on board with that. Cool, cool, cool deal. Unfortunately, we got the bad evolution. This is like a fucking Skull Greymon situation where poor Poliwhirl gets, like, King's Rock addled brain and now has, like, a complete unfortunate reality as a Politoed. So,
you know what? Poliwhirl evolving to a Poliwrath and having overcome its, like, shyness and fear to become, awesome. Like, a fighter, like a boxer.
Yes!
That would have been a complete story arc. That would have been a complete character development storyline.
I wish you hadn't have said that because now my heart is broken.
Plus, it would still look almost exactly the same, just with more fingers.
That's a great argument because you can honestly say that's where its character development was going. You know, you had the whole shy, unsure of itself, not confident, you know, overcoming those fears. And then, of course, then becoming like, you know, a fighter, like you said. The fact that we got robbed and we got a goofy ass Politoed that's just going to stand around and clap and basically be Psyduck 2.0 is an absolute travesty.
I like Politoed better than Poliwrath, as stated, but you're
aesthetically,
right. You're right.
Aesthetically, sure. Politoed is more interesting and dynamic. It's cute. It's like totally different. It's an actual frog now. Great. The tadpole to frog cycle is complete. As a character, it is an absolute like abomination. It was never meant to be. It was a result of a tragic accident. It's like, it should never have come to exist.
If
like,
only Ash had won a water stone from the sumo tournament.
I forgot Poliwrath's a stone evolution. You're so right. Sadly not. So that fucking Chansey ruined several lives just by that one incompetent action of not putting up a caution wet floor sign. And my quote then to round it out is... I have two. Can I do two?
You can do a third quote after I do my quote, because I don't want you to steal mine.
I don't think I'm going to steal yours.
Okay.
One is like three words.
Okay, then you're fine.
Okay, so the first one I already mentioned sort of, and I paraphrased it earlier, so I'll just say the actual quote. It's when Jessie says they're trying to catch Pikachu and they're lamenting their constant failure. So she says, you know, I just realized something. I figured out why our plan fails every time we try to capture that yellow annoyance. We're going about it all wrong. We insist on capturing Pikachu by trying to capture Pikachu. So I thought that was funny.
That was a long-ass quote. That was like the to be or not to be speech that this episode is titled after.
Hamlet. Yes, I know. Okay, and then my other quote, which this is going to be my actual quote because the other one was just like context. But after Polly Whirl evolves into Polly Toad, Ash just says, "That's pretty weird."
Oh, I had that written down.
And I'm like, yep, I agree.
I mean, yeah, the first time you see Polly Toad, you're like, what the fuck is that?
The fact that that was like the sentiment, and they were like, what the fuck? That
did not look like Polly Whirl.
It's a goddamn mistake is what that is.
All right, I got a quote, and I apologize because my computer is making a loud fan noise. Jesse saying, "That went better than expected." And James says, "Yes, it's great that we have such low expectations."
I knew you were going to write that one down.
I know, that's a good one. That's my life motto.
If you keep your expectations low, you can never be disappointed.
I guess my MVP will be Ash for calling Polly Toad weird.
Somebody had to say it.
Just rip the Band-Aid off. Let's just get it off. My LVP is going to be Delaney for being so easily suckered by a forced fortune teller. And also, he was a pretty worthless character. Why was he even there?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like they could have accomplished the same thing without him.
Yeah. We really had a lot to say about this episode, but I don't think it was a very good one. Sorry.
We were just dragging it the whole time, really.
That's true. That's true. Well, we were dragging Polly Toad.
Yeah.
All right, next one.
Oh, next is One Trick Phony, which the majority of this is a battle episode, so... let me get the timer for you. All right, are you ready?
Yes.
3, 2, 1, go.
God, are you guys nostalgic for Pokemon Generation 1? I know I sure am. Let's get it out of our system and then never be nostalgic for Generation 1 ever again. Ash has to battle Jesse and James, who have taken over the Johto Battle Park that apparently exists. And so he battles a Venusaur, a Charizard, and a Blastoise. Did you know that they are the fully evolved forms of the Kanto starters and the mascots for Pokemon Red, Blue, and Green? Isn't this so exciting? I love Generation 1. Generation 1 forever!
Time. Sorry, I got so distracted.
Did I go way over 30 seconds?
But that was my fault because I was laughing so hard at you behind the scenes and I was so, like, taken in by you. I completely forgot to give you the 10-second timer. Sorry.
I was going to keep on going.
I completely forgot about the timer. I was like, yeah, keep dragging Gen 1.
I'm dragging Gen 1 nostalgia.
Oh my god, I'm so sorry. That was great. You did such a good job, and it's rare we get, like, a truly entertaining 30 seconds.
Yeah, usually we're shit.
Yeah, so like Austin mentioned, in case you were feeling nostalgic and in case you forgot about the Kanto starters, the one true Pokemon generation, this episode's going to remind you of that. So we are locked in a very intense battle to start off with between a passing trainer who looks like she's completely prepared to travel in the wilderness with her ballroom gown that she has on.
Did she lose her glass slipper on the way? What's going on?
Does she even have a name? I don't
girl
Cinderella. I mean, you know what? She's gonna just be Cinderella because she looks like she's from a different anime or something. And she has a smoochum named Josephine.
Oh, I missed that. I completely missed that.
The girl might not have a name, but her smoochum sure does, and it's Josephine. Very posh. But before Ash can deliver the final move against her and win the battle, she calls it off. She's like, nope, I'm done. But if you really want to, like, test your battling skills against other people, then you can check out the battle park.
Was this, like, a lost feature for Crystal that went unused?
Is there anything, like, on the wiki about a battle park? And not, like, the Battle Frontier or anything like that.
No, they basically made up a facility for this episode.
I mean, it's just kind of a place where I guess you can rent Pokemon to, like, battle people, I guess.
Ooh, what it seems to ooh. Be. I know where they should have gone.
Where?
White City from Pokemon Stadium 2.
White City?
Yeah, the setting of Pokemon Stadium.
Ooh, that would have been exciting.
Wouldn't that have been fun?
They should have at least done a mention or, like, a nod and be like, where are we? Oh, White City? Yeah. Or, like, the girl should have said, like, just outside White City is a battle zone or whatever.
You can go to the gym leader castle that apparently exists.
Can we just pretend in our minds that that's where they are?
Yes, this is the Pokemon Stadium episode, and they went perfect. To the giant Game Boy Tower location where you can play an emulator of Game Boy games.
I mean, doesn't every city have a giant building that looks like a Game Boy?
Yep.
I know ours does. She's like, well, I'm too much of a chicken to actually let you win this battle, but if you want to battle other people, you can go to the battle park. So Ash is like, okay, that sounds great. Meanwhile, Team Rocket is already ahead of them at the battle park because they've taken an odd job as a Pokeball cleaner. I guess that's what they do. They clean Pokeballs and help tidy up the park, I guess, in general. So the park is closed today, and the only other staff member, manager guy, decides to leave to go shopping. And coincidentally, this is the exact moment when the twerps roll up and they're like, hey, we're here to battle. They should have taken the hint right away because, like, the gates to the park are chained up. There's not a soul in sight. It looks very obviously closed. And they're like, well, maybe we should just come back tomorrow. They go to leave, and then, of course, Team Rocket intercepts them, and they're like, no, 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 by all means, we're open, come on in. Which, again, doesn't make a whole lot of sense, because there would be, like, people all around, I think?
I didn't see any people walking around White City in Pokemon Stadium 2, because White City is a still image.
That is true. This abandoned place, obviously, is open for business.
They're all playing the mini games at the kids' park.
Yeah.
That's what everyone uses Pokemon Stadium for, let's be real.
What are the mini games of Pokemon Stadium? Because I know what Pokemon Stadium 2 the mini games are, but...
Let's find out. Is that the one that has the Voltorb Pikachu charging game?
I thought they had a Pikachu charging game in Stadium 2.
Oh. The Clefairy classroom game.
I never played Stadium 1 as much as I did 2. Mm. The Chansey, like, egg roll game.
I think that was in 2.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. Like, in 2, they had the Chansey egg roll game. They had the Scyther and Pinsir, like, wood chopping. They had a charging game.
Okay, here's the mini games in Stadium 1. The Sandshrew digging into a well. I don't remember that at all. Throwing Ekans around Diglets.
Like a ring toss?
Yeah. Oh. Magikarp splashing to hit a button. Kakuna or Metapod have to harden to not get crushed by a rock.
Whoa.
Rattata run on a treadmill. Drowsy uses hypnosis to make other drowsy sleep. Oh, I remember the Lickitung sushi go round. That's a memorable one.
I feel like
one.
I vaguely remember that.
And the Pikachu Voltorb charging game. God, the mini games in the first one are not very good, are they?
Now do the second one. There was like Golbat flying one.
The Golbat flying one, which is the worst one. The Hitmontop ring knockout.
Yeah.
The Scyther Pinsir cutting.
Love it.
Ooh, you can play as Scizor? How?
What?
How do you play as Scizor?
Was that like a hidden cheat?
I don't
or
know.
Something?
The Furret Beach Ball game.
Oh, right.
Which apparently you can also play as Girafarig. How are people doing this?
We clearly missed out on a pivotal aspect of this game. The Chansey Egg Roll was my favorite one.
Yeah, the Chansey Egg Roll. Barrier Ball with Mr. Mime. Oh, Pichu had a charging game as well.
Oh, that's what I was thinking of. It was the Pichu game.
The Donphan racing game.
Oh, right, right.
Cleffa and Igglybuff, the counting game, and they're like on a game show.
Oh my god, that one cracks me up because you have to like count how many Pokemon walk by on the screen, and it's really fucking hard. And I love the computer, like the CPU at the end, because it'll keep like going crazy. Like you'll be like, bing, 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 and then it'll be like, bing, 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 bing. Bing, 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 like at the end, like it's fucking unhinged. Oh, and yeah, like the one little like boop at the end.
Togepi running, which apparently you can also play as Omanyte. One of my favorites is the Delibird delivery with the conveyor belt.
What is that?
Like they're producing Nintendo 64s and grand pianos and diamond rings, and you have to like drag them to be shipped.
That is a great game.
Oh, and the Eager Eevee game, where the Eevees are walking around a fruit basket and the Apom pulls it up.
Oh, it's like a, what is that childhood game? Like the...
Oh, what is that?
Where you have to like, oh my gosh, I can't remember. It's like where you have to like find a chair before the...
We are so stupid. What is the fucking chair game called?
Oh my god.
Oh my god, we are so dumb. Musical chairs.
Thank you. We have brain damage from that King's Rock.
Oh my god, we got King's Rock embedded in our heads.
I can't believe we couldn't remember the name from Musical Chairs.
Christ,
we are idiots.
Oh my, okay. One trick phony. Okay, we're at the battle park. Okay.
All right, that's enough of that. If you log out now, I wouldn't blame you.
Leave 5-star and say Musical Chair in your
God
review.
I think it's because neither one of us have eaten today.
That's absolutely what it is. I'm like delirious.
I know. I can't even find my words. I'm like,
it's 2 p.m. and I still haven't
fatigued.
Eaten.
I know, I haven't even had any water today. That's got to be it. My brain shriveled up. All right, so let's finish this off here. Team Rocket swindles the twerps into participating in the battle park, even though there's no other person around for miles. They explain that normally patrons of the park would be able to choose from a selection of rental Pokemon to use for battling, but because of their quote-unquote overwhelming demand of all those people that aren't here, they're all spoken for, and there's no other Pokemon. So the only other option is to do the grab bag potluck course, where you can challenge the strongest park Pokemon. So Team Rocket poses as the not only the receptionist people or the ball cleaner people, but also the challengers. And they forget that they don't have an official match moderator person. So Brock's like, well, I guess I'll do it. This is where we get our Gen 1 nostalgia, in case you forgot that the starters of Gen 1 are Venusaur, or the fully evolved forms anyway, are Venusaur, Blastoise, and Charizard. And Misty even goes out of her way at some point, I think it may be later, but I just want to say it now, that Ash, she's like, I wonder if Ash realizes he's facing the evolved forms of all Pokemon that he's owned. And I'm like, yes, Misty, we remember this. Of course, Ash uses his own starter Pokemon against the Kanto starters. So it's Venusaur to start against Cyndaquil.
With James.
James is the trainer, yes. And they're very excited about this because they really don't have, like, any opportunity to ever showcase their talents in an actual battle with strong Pokemon. So James is really excited. Venusaur, obviously these Pokemon are, like, level 100. They've been specially trained. They're, like, the final and most intensive test of the battle park.
James uses shitty moves.
He does better than Jesse.
James uses Tackle, Vine Whip, and Razor Leaf. And Solar Beam.
Yeah, he does use Solar Beam. But to be fair, I mean, they're not battlers and they never have done well in battling, so...
I wondered if these Pokemon have more than four moves.
I did wonder that myself. Because
they both use four moves, but Venusaur has a basic-ass moveset and Charizard does not. But anyway.
I mean, they kind of play fast and loose with the rules. I think there's been instances where Pokemon have used more than four in the anime.
Mm-hmm.
And we've talked about that, but I can't remember specifically. So yeah, Venusaur to start, it's obviously extremely overpowered and strong. The Razor Leaf itself, the leaves are like... as big as a person, to be honest, and they cut down trees. And they all make a very big show of being like, wow, this is, like, really intense. Like, these are not normal Pokemon. And they're kind of skeptical that Ash can even beat them. Cyndaquil does try its best, but ultimately is defeated by, like, a nuclear solar beam blast. Like, it's insane. I felt really bad for Cyndaquil, honestly, because it gets, like, slammed up against trees and shit. Like, It seems like it really got hurt.
Outclassed.
Definitely outclassed. So Jessie steps in next. She's really eager. While Meowth and James are distracted, because James, I think, makes the good point that he should continue and be next again because he didn't lose. But Jessie kind of, like, takes over, as she does.
I'm okay with Jessie having a turn.
Yeah, I mean, I guess so. That's true. They all should have had a turn, to be honest, but we'll get there. So yeah, Jessie steps in and she gets the Charizard and Ash picks Totodile. Jessie is even worse of a battler than James is. She's so bad. And she's so used to using Arbok that she calls out Poison Sting as Charizard's first attack. And everybody's like, what the fuck? And that should have been Ash's first clue. If anything else hadn't told you something fishy was going on, that should have been it right there. But of course, he doesn't even know that Poliwrath's a fighting type, so you can't help him. She didn't read the battle book to see, like, what moves Charizard actually had. So we could have got a definitive answer to if it knew more than four, but we don't. So she has it use Dig.
That was cool.
Does Arbok know Dig? Is that where she gets that from? Okay, so she basically is just using Arbok's moveset, but fortunately for her, she calls out Dig. Charizard actually can use Dig. Can Charizard learn Dig?
I'm guessing it can, since it does in this episode.
I'm not going to look it up. I'm going to assume that it can. I asked that because Charizard cannot learn Fly in Gen 1, despite having wings. So
we're in Gen 2 now. Things are getting crazy.
I think they fixed it in Gen 2, but I could be wrong again.
Okay. Charizard can learn Dig and Earthquake and Mudslap in Gen 2.
Cool. So she gets really lucky then, in that she calls out a completely unexpected move, and everybody's like, what the fuck? And are very surprised when it can actually do it. Then Jessie and Ash get into a scary face-off, and they just keep having them... Yes.
She also has it use Iron Tail.
Oh, I forgot. Iron Tail. And they were also surprised that it could use Iron Tail, which there was an interesting animation for Iron Tail. The tail itself did not turn white. It was the flame.
That was really neat.
I thought that was an interesting way to kind of showcase Iron Tail.
If this was a later season, they could have like made it really cool where like the flame solidifies into like a spiky metal flail.
That would have been fucking awesome.
Yeah.
I could totally see that happening in like Diamond and Pearl.
But it was neat regardless. It was different.
And then I guess they just kind of go back and forth for a while, but eventually they get into a scary face contest. Totodile and Charizard kept making faces at each other until they both fall on their backs. Ash does a really cool move at this point where he instructs Totodile to use Water Gun kind of as like a jetpack slash like Super Mario Sunshine hover pack type thing.
We love a Mario Sunshine moment.
I do love a Super Mario Sunshine moment. He's like, okay, point it at the ground and fly off. And it kind of is neat the way they animated it. Like they kind of do a wide shot and they have like Charizard and Totodile on one side and the other. And Totodile uses the water gun to kind of like pew, like off screen. I thought that was kind of neat cinematically, but
I could be mistaken. Didn't Cyndaquil do the same thing with Flamethrower in the Jasmine battle versus Steelix? I remember it hiding underground for a while. Did I make that up?
I know it hid in the holes. It hid in the holes.
Oh, no. It used Flamethrower to not hit the wall. That's right. What it was. Okay.
Right.
Got it.
Okay. Ultimately, I think it gives a water gun into Charizard's back, and it ultimately ends up beating Charizard.
Was this an earned victory?
I
just don't know if Totodile has the sheer power to knock it down with a water gun.
No.
Maybe a hydro pump, but not a water gun.
Not a water gun. No, I don't think so. I mean, these are supposed to be Pokemon that are like level 100 fully evolved. I just don't believe that Ash's Pokemon could easily take them out like right. that. Obviously, what they were going for was like a 1-to-1 victory ratio so far. Like, you know, James had won the first one and, you know, then Ash won the second one. So now you have the third one and it's a toss-up kind of thing. So yeah, the third Pokemon to come out is, you guessed it, a Blastoise.
I was mad Jesse got to use Blastoise. I think Meow should have gotten the chance to be a Pokemon trainer. That would have been funny, potentially.
There was a moment Meowth and James are arguing again on who should be next. And he tries to argue with Jesse about it. Like, no, I should do it. But she overpowers him and does it. I really was. I'm with you. I was disappointed because I really wanted to see how Meowth would do as like a trainer.
That would be potentially interesting.
A Pokemon ordering a Pokemon. Like that's...
Yeah, he could have like some sort of like weird crisis of conscience or something.
So we get another Jesse battle. Jesse concerningly calls Blastoise handsome.
Oh, missed that.
She's like powerful, awesome, something. I can't remember the adjectives that she used, but she definitely says handsome. And I'm like, well.
She's been reading up on her Sinnoh folklore.
God damn.
In the Candle Leaf Library.
That was unexpected. I was like, all right, Jesse, just reel it in a little bit, girlfriend. I didn't really pay attention to the Blastoise battle. So if you have anything you want to say here, please, by all means.
We should mention Jesse decides to go by the book. And so it makes it less fun.
Yeah, she doesn't call out any strange random moves. I didn't write it down at all. What does she have it do again?
Looks like it did Hydro Pump. I know it withdrew at some point. Used Withdraw.
Didn't he use Bubble?
Oh, did it? That's a low power move.
Well, there was actually an interesting moment I do remember. She is like talking to herself and like thinking to herself. She's like, speed, because Pikachu's big thing is speed. And obviously Blastoise is slower. And she's like, what can I use to combat the speed? And she uses Bubble because Bubble has a speed lowering secondary effect.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
There's a chance of it.
Oh, I never knew that. Okay.
I think, or is it just Bubble Beam? Hold on. I could be putting my foot in my mouth here.
Oh, wow. Bubble does 20 damage.
Oh, it does have a chance to lower speed. Perfect. Okay, yeah. Base power 20, inflicts damage, and has a 33.2% chance of lowering the target's speed by one stage.
She's trying to go by the book.
33.2% is weird. Oh, but now, oh, in Gen 2, sorry, that was Gen 1. In Gen 2, Bubble only now has a 10% chance of lowering the speed stat. Bloody, bloody, blah. Ultimately, Pikachu defeats Blastoise with a powerful thunder. I thought the thunder was cool because it like tore up the ground.
That becomes the standard thunder animation, which I'm glad they did. That they
galvanizing. Yeah, it was pretty cool. I like that they changed it to kind of be its own thing instead of just a more powerful thunderbolt, because...
To be visually distinct, yes.
Yes. And then, of course, Jesse blows their cover at this point by calling out Arbok, and they realize, oh, this is Team Rocket all along. at this very moment, the park dude has somehow materialized by their side and was like, hey, you can't steal the park balls. And they make off with the park balls, but the three Pokemon do not listen to anybody outside of the park boundary. So they blast them off again. I feel like I talked incessantly. You didn't say anything in that episode.
Battle episode.
I think I said a lot, actually. I kept on interjecting.
Battle episode. It's a battle episode.
You're going to listen back and be like, oh, Austin sure was interjecting a lot.
Okay, I hope that's the case. Any other thoughts on...
This was an unneeded episode, but there was some good animation.
Yeah, what was the point of this? Filler, I guess?
Maybe they had an excess of Venusaur, Blastoise, Charizard stock? Like plushie stock?
Yeah, because this was obviously a promotional, like, merchandising episode where they're like, gotta sell those Gen 1 plushies.
Poor Flaffy doesn't have an episode yet.
Wait, we haven't had a Flaffy episode?
Flaffy and Typhlosion don't appear in the Johto anime, aside from movies and specials.
What?
Obviously, Porygon 2 never appears ever. Togetic does not appear either, but that's a whole different story.
Typhlosion doesn't get a Johto episode?
Isn't that weird?
That is so weird, considering that Typhlosion... Would you consider Typhlosion to be the most popular of the Gen 2 final forms?
Well, now Typhlosion's a loaded word. I'm kidding.
if you know, you know.
I don't know who's most popular of the three. Probably
Typhlosion. It has to be Feraligatr or Typhlosion. I would say Typhlosion.
They consider Legend of Thunder to be a big Typhlosion moment, I guess.
But that's a separate thing. If you're talking about, like, the anime, like, proper, like, I'm... really shocked. Like, they wouldn't ride the Charizard coattails, but I guess they don't need to because they'll just have Charizard there.
Hey,
why the fuck not? Like, forget Typhlosion, we can just bring back Charizard.
I hope you like Charizard, by the way, because more Charizard to come sooner than you might think.
Charizard is a very contentious topic in the Pokemon sphere, because
we'll be discussing Charizard very soon.
Everybody's going to discuss Charizard until the day they die.
I'm trying to foreshadow here, and you're just not acknowledging it.
I'm trying to make my own point, but also acknowledge it. You're saying that our Charizard's going to return.
No, I never said such a thing.
Oh, okay. Anyway, Charizard. I love Charizard. Charizard was my favorite as a child, but Charizard is way overdone, and they just need to give Charizard a break. So, yeah, that is it. Can't wait to see more Charizard.
MVP, LVP, and quote.
Who's first?
I'm first. My MVP is going to be Jessie, because I thought her Charizard versus Totodile battle was pretty fun.
That was fun.
My LVP.
So, hold on one second. I just have a question. Is Jessie the one trick phony? Because all she knows how to do is battle with Arbok.
Is the one trick that it's just Team Rocket and they're phonies?
I don't know. I feel like Jessie's the one trick phony because she was trying to use Arbok moves.
But then she tried to do it by the book.
She can't do anything without the book. I don't know.
Let's not overanalyze the episode title, because it'll turn out to be a Shakespeare reference that we don't remember. My LVP is going to be William Shakespeare.
Oh, God.
No, I'm kidding. My LVP is going to be the Battle Park Manager for hiring three new hires, one of whom is a Meowth, and leaving them in charge of the entire facility on everyone else's day off, apparently.
I mean, I guess he couldn't have, like, predicted that they would try to do that. I mean,
yeah, but that's a lot of work for new hires.
Clean the balls.
Well, he's, like, tend the ground. And I'm like, okay, what does that entail?
He's obviously, like, abusing his managerial power, because he's like, bye, I'm going to go shopping.
Plus, he was totally getting stoned in his office the whole time. He did not leave to go shopping.
Yeah.
He just, like, magically reappears at one point.
With no
shopping bags.
Maybe he's the phony.
My quote is James saying, you know, she's not half bad. Meow says, yeah, but it's the other half I worry about. I've seen the craziness that lurks there.
That was what I wrote down. Oh, damn.
That was the only good quote. Sorry.
Okay. My LVP is going to be Jessie for calling Blastoise handsome.
Oh, fair.
Nobody knows what people are thinking in their own minds, and I'm sure people's minds are very scary places, but my MVP, God, is there anybody that even deserves it?
Totodile beat a Charizard, somehow.
No, that's just dumb
Pikachu
luck.
Pikachu used that cool thunder animation we like?
No, my MVP is going to be Charizard.
Sure.
I'm surprising myself, honestly, because I wasn't even gonna do that, but I like that Charizard could use Dig, and it's really cool Iron Tail.
Yeah. And it had a better moveset than the other two, I'll say that much.
Yeah, it did have a better moveset, and the scary face thing was cute that it did, so why not?
No, we're not at why not yet.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Why not actually showing up earlier than you might think?
Next week? I don't know.
Not that soon.
Oh, okay. My quote is the only other thing I wrote down because there was not a lot of dialogue this episode. Brock says, in response to Charizard being able to use Dig, and Misty's very shocked by this, he says, "What do I know? All the rules I've learned are out the window."
I guess they've never heard of TMs before.
I guess not. Brock didn't know that Swagger boosted attack the last time, so...
Okay, admittedly, I don't know what Swagger does.
Well, that's...
But then again, I'm not a gym leader, so there you go.
He doesn't have an excuse. He's always reading that stupid book, and he's a gym leader, and he still doesn't know. Okay, that is a wrap. Austin, what is on the menu for next week?
Okay, we got more Politoed to discuss next week. I guess we're going to see once and for all what Misty does with this Politoed. And I poly told you so. And then we got an atypical episode, because this one was not dubbed into Jinx, into English.
Did you say an atypical episode or an atypical episode?
I don't know what I said. What did I say?
I don't know. We got to play the tape back. Play the tape back.
It's atypical or atypical? Atypical?
Is it a space typical? Like atypical episode.
Oh, sorry. Okay, I thought you were talking about my pronunciation.
An atypical episode.
Atypical episode.
Okay, that's what I was confused.
It's an unusual episode that was not dubbed into English because of Jinx, and it's simply called The Ice Cave.
This is a special episode, then.
It's a... Yes, you can say that.
Okay, I can't wait. Our two favorite Pokemon here on Out of the Drying Pan, Politoed and Jinx.
Okay, Politoed's not as bad as fucking Jinx.
That's true.
Nothing's as bad as Jinx.
This is a winning combination, though, right? Right. Well, that's interesting. I don't remember if I probably never have seen this. If it wasn't dubbed into English... No, that's a lie, because I would have watched it with you back in our early watch days, but that was like 11 years ago, so...
Yeah, it's not very memorable. I don't remember this stretch of episodes hardly at all.
So this is our Ice Cave or Ice Path episode, then?
Yep.
Well, you have that to look forward to. Any final thoughts?
God, we've been recording for a long time.
We have.
How long is this episode going to be after the edit? We'll see.
All right. So, thank you. If you stuck with us this long, we appreciate it. We hope you enjoyed listening as much as we enjoy talking about these episodes. If you have any thoughts you want to share with us, want to get in touch, questions, comments, whatever it is, you name it, you can do so at our Gmail, outofthedryingpan@gmail.com. Again, that is outofthedryingpan@gmail.com, or you can hit us up over on X/Twitter @outofdryingpan. Again, @outofdryingpan, or get in touch with us over on Instagram. That is @outofthedryingpan. We also have a Patreon. If you like what we do and want to support our efforts here and our craziness, we would encourage you to do so if you so choose. You can find a link in the description of the podcast. You can check us out. We've got all kinds of bonus content, fan fiction episodes, outtakes, all kinds of fun things. And of course, we'd like to say thank you for listening. We hope you have a great week, and we will see you next time as the journey continues.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.